informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for a good solid body for my Hemi, you know? Something I can shoehorn in and run.
Are you gonna build? Go fast?
If I'm gonna rebuild, I might as well go fast.
Right.
Can't dance.
All right. Hi. Yeah, it's good to see someone drive one of these in here. Most of them have to be towed.
I'm looking for a chassis which I want to stick a big Hemi engine in. You got anything?
Cheap.
Going racing?
Yeah.
Pre-war Willys rise up like a cutter through ice.
Oh, it'd be a miracle just to see one again.
Want to see one?
Oh, you see one every now and then sitting in an old garage in Rollo, Missouri, or by the side of the road in West Lafayette.
Or hidden in a junkyard in Lyons, California. Come here. Come on.
It moved.
But you ain't gonna sell it, right?
Sonny Munn offered me $1,000 once.
I'm gonna race him?
Everybody kinda lost interest in these old hot rods.
How about your old Dodge body? You have enough left to bail?
Sure like to see it run again. Especially against Munn. Let's talk. If you beat the Munns, it's yours. Free.
Just like the old hot rods I've seen in the pictures.
Yeah, every kid used to have one.
I'm gonna build a car, too. Just like yours.
Yeah. It's looking good, Lefty. What kind of engine you run?
Rubber band, I guess.
It's my first engine, too. Don't wind it too tight. Won't start.
This is Bill Warner of the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance, and you are listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google Tan Talk 1340.com, and you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us, and visit NostalgicRadioandCars.com, where you can listen to all our past shows for the last, 14 and some odd years. You know what? We got an anniversary coming up here in another month. Yeah, May. And so we're looking forward to that, too. So we have a very special show for you this evening. We got a special guest coming on from the eastern side of Florida. And Silliman is the founder and CEO of the American Muscle Car Museum. And it's a pretty amazing place. If you get a chance, check it out, AmericanMuscleCarMuseum.com. It's located over in Melbourne, like I said. And it's roughly 3 acres under roof with some 400 amazing cars. And the gentleman is very philanthropic, and he does a lot of stuff for charities, car clubs, schools, universities, and automotive-oriented type programs. I'm really looking forward to having him on the show, and he's going to share some of his stories with us and talk about the cars and some of his philanthropic efforts. This show should be pretty exciting. So without further ado, I think what we're going to do is we're going to fire up a little music here. This is probably an oldie but goodies. This is a nice 60s surf song and one of my favorites. In fact, the very first record I ever bought at a little thrift store in San Rafael, California. It's called Surf City, and it's by Jan and Dean. So don't touch that dial. You're tuned into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. So fire up the Woody, grab your surfboard, catch a wave, hang 10, and we'll be right back.
Two girls for every
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, sports fan, car guys, and everybody like that, you're back, and we're tuned in to, you guys are tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and it's time to introduce our special guest for the evening. I'm not sure if a lot of you guys are familiar with this, but there's a really, really, really cool automobile museum over on the east coast of Florida. It's called the American Muscle Car Museum, and it's in Melbourne, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening the CEO, founder, and president of the American Muscle Car Museum, and his name would be Mark Pylock. Did I pronounce that right, Mike?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Well, anyway, Mark, I'm delighted to have you on the show. We've been looking forward to this for quite a while. So tell us a little bit about how you got into the muscle car museum business.
Okay. Well, first of all, I can say ever since I was a little kid, I was into cars. You can probably tell from my accent. I definitely have a Boston accent. So I parked my car in the Harvard Yard.
Very good.
You know, growing up as a little kid, I used to play with my old Tonka trucks out in the sand pile, you know, on the side of the house. Had an uncle that had a junkyard business, and we used to always go there as a kid, and we had, you know, five kids in our family, and my other siblings all had numerous kids, and so we used to go play hide-go-seek in his junkyard, and his junkyard was probably about a quarter mile wide by half mile deep, so you know, we could really go and explore and hide in these old cars. And I remember as a kid, you'd go in those old cars, and I thought they were all kind of neat looking on the inside. And you'd put your hands down behind the seats looking for some coins. You'd open up the glove box and see if there was any maps or an owner's manual in there or whatever. So ever since I was a little kid, you know, I've always been exposed to the older vehicles. And I grew up with a brother that, you know, was 10 years older. And when he got out of Vietnam, he was kind of a muscle car fan. He bought a new muscle car about every 4 to 6 months and would trade it in, buy another one. And back then, nobody ever thought they'd be worth anything. So, you know, he'd buy them, have one hell of a great time, and trade them off and get another one and repeat the process. So that was kind of my exposure as a kid growing up. And used to get a lot of rides with my brother and his buddies. And today, you know, they'd probably throw him in jail because they'd say, oh, that was child endangerment. You know? And but back then I just thought, you know, as a, you know, kid 10, 12 years old, I was like, man, this is a blast. I'm loving this ride.
What were some of the cars that your brother bought?
Oh, my brother bought a whole series of cars. He had like a 1970 Corvette LT1 coupe, 1972 Corvette LT1 convertible, had a 1970 454 Chevelle, had a 1971 Chevelle, the 402, you know, big block, they called it, heavy Chevy. He had a 69 Mercury Cyclone spoiler, you know, so he loved his muscle cars. He also had two GTOs. One was a Ram Air 4 convertible. One was a Ram Air 4 coupe. He loved those cars. And so he was predominantly a General Motors fan. He even bought once a 68 Volkswagen and turned it into a dune buggy. And so, you know, my early years of exposure, you know, we always had a bunch of muscle cars. And I'll never forget the day he pulled up once in front of my uncle's place. And, you know, there was him and his buddy Hermanson, and they were sitting in a brand new GTO convertible, and they had 12 women in the car. And I was looking as a kid, and I was like, man, there's a lot of women in that car. And I remember the old Beach Boys song, you know, two women for every guy, you know, and that was in California. And I'm like, geez, in Massachusetts, there's six women for every guy. This is even a better state.
Yeah. Well, that was Jan and Dean, actually, two girls for every guy in Surf City song.
Yeah, it was Surf City, not Beach Boys. Okay, yeah. Stan corrected me. I'm not big into music. I'm definitely not a trivia expert in that area.
Okay, well, that gave me a clue, because we play music on this on our radio show every once in a while as bumpers and fillers, and I'm going to use that song. I think that's perfect. Thank you for that one. All right, go ahead. Continue.
So I started actually working on vehicles mainly because, you know, we grew up in a working household, and my dad and my uncle, they worked on their cars just to maintain them and drive them. My brother Dexter got into, you know, the muscle car craze, and then he got into like the, you know, like a 49 Merc, and really started liking his Tri-5 Chevys, you know, 55, 56, 57. And so that interest of restoration also played into a bunch of my friends that I grew up with all worked on cars. And so before you know it, it was kind of a common thing that today a lot of people spend time on, you know, TV or their smartphones or whatever. We used to spend evenings or weekends working on automobiles. Different people did different things, you know. So when I was 15, I could do upholstery work. I'd do my own painting work, interior work, light mechanical work. And you learn from, you know, guys that were, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years older than you how to do stuff. And it was just the way to spend time. You know, that was kind of what you did on the weekends. You weren't spending watching, you know, TV or anything like that. You were working out back, you know, in a friend's garage or your garage or whatever the case may be. So that's how I got into vehicles. And, you know, I just loved working on them. It was like peaceful, you know, good therapy.
Oh, yeah. That's a good word for it, therapy. Well, let's put it this way. What was your first car?
My first car was like all my brothers and sisters, a hand-me-down from my folks.
Oh, okay.
So we grew up in a Ford family.
Good.
And when the kid would get to be about 16 years old and you could legally get your driver's license, they would give you either your mom or your dad's old car. And my first car was a 1967 Ford Ranch Wagon, and it had 130,000 miles on it. And my dad gave it to me, and I says, well, I'm going to restore this car. And he goes, you're crazy. He says, it's just an old station wagon. And but my Uncle Eber, who owned the junkyard, he says, hey, anything you need, you know, it's always free in the junkyard. And another one of my uncles, Johnny, worked for Eber. And he says, hey, he says, if you need anything, first time, Johnny will take it off for you, no problem. Second time, Johnny will work with you to take off the pot, no problem. Third time, you're on your own. But, you know, if you really don't have the time to take it off, go buy a cold six-pack of beer. Tell Johnny, hey, you go ahead, whatever you need, an engine, whatever, fender, whatever. You pull the engine or whatever, I'll give you this cold six-pack of beer. Man, that was the quickest way if you ever wanted to get any pots. And like my Uncle Libra said, he said, but remember one thing. I says, what's that? Make sure you get your pot before you give Johnny that cold six pack of beer. Because once you do, you're not getting your pot that day.
Good story.
And so having a, you know, an uncle that was in the junkyard business, we used to see all the time, early Z28s coming in to be crushed, you know, Boss 302s, every now and then a Boss 429. And you know, you'd just pull the engine, like on a Boss 429, you'd pull the engine, and you'd crush the body. You didn't even think anything of it.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, same thing with the Hemi cars. You know, he'd pull the 426, you know, engines, because those he had a, you know, place he could sell them. And I guess people used to, you know, drag race with them or whatever. But the rest of the car, just crush it. And so it was kind of an interesting day that, you know, today you look back and so many of the cars that, you know, we crushed, or he crushed actually, would be beautiful restoration projects. You know what I mean? That they, you know, maybe got hit in the rear end and, you know, the insurance company totaled them, and you'd go ahead and say, go ahead, scrap the car, maybe pull the engine. You know, today you'd say, oh my God, you're going ahead, you're going to crush that Boss 302. What, are you crazy or something? But, you know, who knows? Today you go buy a new smartphone and you get rid of your old one. You don't think of anything of value. And who knows, maybe 50 years from now, people come to you and you go, oh, do you have one of those original Nokias where you used to pull the antenna up and to make a phone call? That could be worth big money. Who knows? You know, or those old Motorola flip phones, those Razors, as they used to call them.
The Razors and the StarTacs, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I grew up in a Ford family, so I started buying old Mustangs and restoring them, 65, 66. Then I got into Mach 1s, you know, 71, 72 Mach 1s. Then I got into Shelby's, 66 GT350 was my first Shelby I ever had. And so did a couple 55, 57 Chevys over. So by the time I was 30 years old, I had done 10 cars over. And my only problem is I fixed them up and I sold them. I only sold a few ever. And I said, geez, by the time I get this car done, it's going up in value. It didn't pay for me to sell it. And so by the time I was 30 years old, I already had 12 old cars, and I just kept buying and fixing up, or eventually, you know, having other people restore vehicles as I got, you know, further in my career and my businesses and everything. And it's always been a hobby to me. You know, I'm not a dealer. I'm not a licensed dealer of anything. Never have been. Don't plan to. I've just always loved the vehicles and love the people you meet. You know, the car people, I'd say 99% of car people are great people. And, you know, you're not talking religion or politics, you're talking automobiles and, you know, great people in the car hobby.
Well, now talking about your career a little bit. So you're 30, you've got a few cars squirreled away, you fixed a few, you sold a few. So where did you go to school? What did you major in? And then tell us a little bit about your business background.
Okay. I ended up going to school to be a pharmacist. So I actually have my BS in pharmacy, went to Massachusetts College of Pharmacy in Boston, Mass. When I got my BS degree, I then went on and got my master's degree in industrial pharmacy. And at that point, I thought I'd kind of be like my dad, go work for a big drug company my whole life. I worked 1 year in industry, then went on. They told me I should go back and get an MBA. I went back to University of Michigan, got an MBA from their business school there, graduated and went to work for a drug company. Worked, you know, all the time. I worked 60, 70 hours a week, got promoted every year. But they wanted to keep moving me around every 2 to 3 years. And after moving a couple times, I was like, you know, this is getting old. And my dad had constantly moved around, you know, with General Electric. We seemed to be, 3 to 5 years someplace, and then we'd move and we'd be there another 3 to 5 years and move again. And I go, oh, geez, I'm kind of following in my dad's footprints. And, you know, every time you get a new promotion, they want to ship you someplace. And so I said, well, you know, they wanted to move me back to Philadelphia, and I just got married at that time. And my wife had no desire to move back to the Philadelphia area. So at 32, started my own business. And that business actually was in the companion animal health area, dog, cats, and horses. And actually got into the nutritional supplement side of the business, which eventually led to the drug side of the business, have a couple patents on the drug side of the business. And the company I have today is Pet Flavors. So if you go to, you know, petflavors.com, you'll actually see the business. And what we do is we develop new prescription drug products with the drug companies, have been in business now for, 34 years. And we sell them the flavor that makes those chewable tablets palatable. So if you go anywhere in the world today and you get a prescription chewable tablet for your dog, and let's say it's for arthritis or cardiovascular, diabetes, or whatever the condition the animal is suffering from, we sell the flavors to about 30% of all the products on a worldwide basis. So when I tell people I only make about a penny every time a dog swallows one of the chewable tablets with that flavor in it, and people tell you a penny doesn't amount to anything, I go, well, a penny does amount to something. if you start getting billions of pennies, okay, you just move that decimal place two places, and that turns into real money. And so that being said, I've always been, you know, from a technological point of view, I guess you'd call me an R&D type person, developing and patenting new products. But my hobby and my love has always been the old vehicles, as well as the modern. You know, the American Muscle Car Museum, we go from the mid-50s all the way up to 2024. So, you know, we're predominantly American automobiles, but we do have a touch of what I call foreign influence. And so, you know, today we have a little over 450 vehicles in total at the American Muscle Car Museum.
How large of a facility is it? How many square feet?
We have a 132,000 square foot facility on a 42-acre site.
Well, you're 3 acres under roof.
Yeah, we have a big facility, brand new, 100% AC heated. Of course, you never need heat in Florida. Dehumidified. We also, it's 100% solar powered. So we have 1,200 solar panels. So all the electricity that we consume is actually generated by the sun. Anything that we don't consume is sent back to the grid. So we're 100%, you know, net zero facility, which is kind of, you know, unheard of today, but it's possible to do.
Well, let me ask you this now. Okay, so your pharmaceutical business, is it located on the same premises as the at someplace else?
No, actually, straight as the crow flies, I'm about a mile and a half away, or less than a 5-minute drive. So. Not very far away, which is, you know, very convenient. So like this morning, I was at the American Muscle Car Museum and always over there checking on everything. You know, this past weekend, we just did a big Porsche autocross event. And then we did a Porsche ice cream social, and people could come, and they were raising money for a couple different charities, and the entire museum was open. So, you know, I tell people the beauty of the American Muscle Car Museum is we're not open to the public, but we're actually open about 100 days a year for activities.
Interesting.
In 2023, we were actually open 125 days. So, you know, that doesn't mean anybody from the general public can come on any given day. But we always have, you know, events kind of four main categories. We have charity fundraisers. We do about 15 events like that a year. I pay for all the food and the alcohol. They collect all the money, sell all the tickets. On average, since we've opened in 2016, we've averaged about $1.5 million a year that is raised to local charities. The second category we do is thank you events. Thank you events, as an example, the biggest thank you event we do every year, and we do about 10, 12 thank you events per year, is our free Veterans Day open house. So November 11th, or the closest Saturday or Sunday to when that actually falls on the calendar every year, we have a free open house for anybody who's a veteran or active duty military and direct families that are associated with both of those categories of people. And so, you know, you can bring your dad, your mom, your kids, your brother, you know, direct family members. We don't check any IDs. And we have free food. We have free beer, wine, pizza, desserts, you know, for thousands of people. Last year, we didn't even advertise it, okay, because we don't want to block up traffic like we did a couple years earlier. We had 4,500 people show up. Between 1 and 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. The last year we did advertise it, which was just crazy. We had traffic backed up a mile and a half on I-95, and that's 1.5 miles away from the car museum. So we're not doing that again because we created a massive traffic problem. Plus, we were also giving away over $50,000 worth of free prizes and a new vehicle. And so we had people that were coming in from Michigan and Maryland and Missouri and Nebraska and you name it. And it was so crowded. They were like, oh, we got to stop doing this. This is getting crazy. So we haven't been doing that away, you know, that anymore, giving away a free vehicle or stuff like that. But just having the open house for all the veterans and their families, people really appreciate it. And so that's the second type is thank you events. Third type is auto related. We do about 40 days of auto related activities a year. Like I said, Porsche Autocross here just this past weekend on Saturday. Previous weekend, we had Corvette Autocross for 2 days. So we do about 16 days of sanctioned autocross racing there. Most clubs cut it off to about 50 pre-registered vehicles per race day. And they usually run about 5 times their vehicle per autocross. Then we host a lot of shows. We do local shows. We do regional shows. We do national shows. Here in this past year, we just hosted the Mustang Grand National show. That was actually a 4-day event. We've hosted regional shows like with the Porsche 356 Club. We've done also like the AACA Winter Nationals. And those are usually like 2-day events. So, you know, a mixture of car club, you know, shows with those different, you know, car clubs. Then the next category we do for automotive is a lot of test driving. So, you know, we have a lot of automotive programs here at the different universities in Florida, whether it be University of Florida, Florida State, Florida Institute of Technology. So they all have automotive programs for their students. And so the kids have to build different types of automobiles as part of their projects. And so we allow them to come to the car museum, which is closed, you know, it's a closed facility, and they can actually test out their, quote, school projects. I can tell you that most of those school projects, make sure you bring a tow strap with you because they're not going to run too long, okay? They usually all run, but they don't run too long. So eventually you're going to need a tow strap to pull them back onto the trailer or whatever. And then we also do new vehicle testing. We do, as an example, an EV car show every year. And last year we had over 10 different EV manufacturers bring cars and were giving people either free rides in them or they would ride, you know, as a ride along, you know, the company representative, and you could actually drive the EV. And so people love that. You know, you come and, you know, where can you check out, you know, 10 different manufacturers all in the same day to drive around the closed course facility? You know, and it's something unique. So that would be the third major category is automotive. And the last is really what I call educational. We are a 501c3 nonprofit by the IRS. So, you know, the educational aspect is we have like Boy Scout days, Cub Scout days, Girl Scout days, 3 days a year for boys and girls clubs. We do Super State Kids. We do the Soapbox Derby. Pinewood Derby was just done a couple weeks ago at our facility. So all types of school tours, you know, anywhere from like first grade to college automotive, you know, graduate students coming through the facility. We just had a tour there from students from the University of Delaware were here, made a field trip down. And so, you know, educationally, we give a lot of tours. Now, educationally, we also won't post those on our website. So if we do a private event, let's say like a school tour, kids or first, second grade kids, well, of course, we won't publish anything on our website because there's too many nuts in the world today. You know, so that we actually do, but we don't publicize it. But when we actually do, you know, like Boy Scout days and, you know, Pinewood Derby Day, Soapbox Derby Day, of course, those we will go ahead and publish on our website. And then, of course, all the, you know, charity fundraisers are, and the thank you events. Sometimes if they're open to the public, they'll be publicized, sometimes not. You know, we have a big police event going on, and there's a national police softball tournament going on this week here in Brevard County, and we're hosting a big event for all the, you know, police softball teams at the museum. Of course, that'll be a closed event. You got to be a team member or associated with the team to come, but we'll have an event with, I don't know, there'll probably be at least 300-400 cops there, so, you know, I don't see that we'll have any problems with that many people. And
One of the things I wanted to touch base on, okay, so I'm on your events page on your website, okay, American Muscle Car Museum, and on the 14th, you're having a British and European car show. On the 20th, you're having Drive Electric Month. On the 27th, you've got Porsche Club of America, Space Coast Region, Autocross. So it's really, really cool. Now, do you have like a, if people want to get on a mailing list, or is the best way for people to find out about it, just get on the website?
Best is always get on the website. One thing we do is we don't publish way ahead on the website.
Okay.
And the reason we don't do that is because sometimes the clubs will change their date.
Okay.
So we don't want to put out, you know, a year ahead, hey, such and such a date for a Porsche Autocross, because something could always come up. So we try to only keep that window shorter for auto-related activities. Now, it's a national show that's usually cast in stone. Yeah, we'll put it out there as soon as, you know, we got to go from the national club to show it. And then when it comes to, I would say, like Veterans Day, we always publish that well ahead so people can plan on that, that we kind of set in stone for our Veterans Day event every year, because we have people that often come from other countries even. You know, we had one event that we had people from Europe, and we counted over 37 people that were veterans, and they approached us and they said, hey, we're a veteran. We've been in, you know, such and such country's army, which is part of NATO, or the Canadian Armed Forces, could we come to your free Veterans Day? And we said, yes, of course you can, and you can still bring your family and friends, whatever. And so that we'll go ahead and always publish ahead. So, no, the website is definitely the best place to check us out.
Now, I noticed here, May 18th is the Porsche Club of America auto detailing class, and then it skips all the way into October, which is the Cape Kennedy Corvette Club Oktoberfest Autocross course. I see one here that I'm going to have to be at, and that's the Corvette versus Porsche Challenge, and that's in October, because me being a Porsche guy, you know, we have to always see, we got this Porsche Corvette thing, kind of like Ford Chevy thing. But anyway, so you skip May and go right into October. Does that mean there's no events during the summertime, or they just haven't been posted?
No, what we typically do is we close pretty much over the summertime.
Okay.
So since we're working often 6-7 days a week, and I have a lot of salaried, you know, employees, they accumulate a lot of comp time. So come summertime, we try to end about middle of May and start back in the latter part of September, at least past the 15th of September. Now, if we're hosting a national show like we did this past September for Mustang Club of America, we did that the second weekend in September. You know, that was something, you know, that they had a certain dates, so we accommodated them. Typically in the summertime, we'll do some of the homeschool tours. We'll do three Boys and Girls Club days that we have for three different Boys and Girls Clubs here in Brevard County. We'll do some other school tours, but otherwise we're not doing any fundraisers or large thank you events.
Okay.
And we know from an auto-related point of view, it's just so hot. We tried autocross racing in the summer a couple times, and the drivers, they just die. You know, they just like, oh my God, this is just miserable being out here in the heat. So
yeah.
we did away with that. We been there, done that. We're not doing that again.
Okay. I wanted to jump back. You and I talked earlier. You spent some time in Europe, and so tell us a little bit about your experiences in Europe and how that kind of rounded off your car appetite, so to speak.
Okay. Well, I had been, you know, grown up in a family, like I said, had a great experience of American muscle cars from my brother Dexter. My mom was a lead foot. Okay. Every time you'd buy a new car, she always wanted to get the biggest engine possible. because back in the day, most Americans don't realize it, but once you left the city limits, there was no speed limit in so many states in the United States. So when we lived in Arizona from, 1959 to 63, the old maps in Arizona was as soon as you got outside of Phoenix city limits, it was drive at a safe and reasonable speed. Okay. And my mom believed the safe and reasonable speed was about 115 to 125 miles per hour.
Oh, okay. Was she European?
Okay. So, no. My mom was what we'd call an old Yankee. She traced her roots back, to the 1700s in New England.
Okay.
But she just drove like a bat out of hell. And the fastest she ever did, okay, I remember way back, it was 1968. And we dropped my dad off at Logan Airport. Back then, you didn't have, flights like you do today to probably get from one coast to the other coast as easily as you did way back then. It was, a lot easier today. We dropped him off, and I remember it was pitch dark. And my mom said, we had to meet him out in Helena, Montana. And she says, we're going to pick your dad up tomorrow at the airport in Helena. And I says, well, when does this flight get in? It gets in about 12:30, okay? So just 30 minutes after noon. And my mom took off, okay? We stopped that night in Fargo, North Dakota, okay? I remember we checked into the hotel. It was pitch dark. We got up early. I was eating, my mom would give us kids a bowl of cereal with milk in it. You know what I mean? You lived out of the Coleman cooler.
Yeah.
And she said, we got to hit the road early because we got to get to Helena before your dad's plane gets in. And back then, we got to Helena. You could drive your car literally right out onto the tarmac. Of course, Helena was, nothing for a city back then. It was, not even 20,000 people. And that was the day you'd come down the jet bridge. You'd physically walk out of the plane down onto the tarmac there and walk into the building. And so when my dad came down that, walk bridge, he wasn't looking for anybody to meet him. And my mom was there and us kids. And my mom was like, hey, John, that was my dad's name. Hey, we're here to pick you up. And my dad looked totally shocked. And my mom had a lead foot. but getting back then to Europe, okay, having said that, I was used to always driving in cars relatively fast, okay? And so I went to Germany. I was a student there. My sister, Mary, who's back then an English teacher, set it up that I could go to a German gymnasium for a couple years to school. So I went to school there with a guest family, and a person just a couple houses down had a 9/11. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw the 9/11, I was like, wow, that's a really nice sports car, really small compared to American, sports cars. But got to know the guy and he didn't drive it every day to work. It was just this weekend vehicle. And so I got to know him real good, talked to him, and he'd give me rides in his Porsche. And the one thing I noticed, I was like, wow, this car handles and brakes so well. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You could get on windy roads or in town, and it was just grip the road and unbelievable handling. And I was like, man, if you could take American raw horsepower, okay, like say a Ram Air 4 and a GTO or whatever, okay, or a, 454 Chevy, and put that with the braking and handling of a Porsche, man, you'd have a super sports car. So that's where my affection to, Porsches came from my time in Germany. So part of the American Muscle Car Museum is I have a total of 77 Porsches in total.
Wow.
I have 9 Porsche tractors. I have one of every make and model ever built. They've all been restored. I've had people from Porsche Germany come, Porsche US come. I have one Porsche SUV. I have a Cayenne Turbo S and one of one Speed Yellow. I drive that a lot. I got 117,000 miles on it and still looks brand new. And then I have mostly other 911s. So I have 3 Porsche 959s. I have 2 Porsche Carrera GTs. And then I have one 918 paint the sample in Riviera Blue. And most of the Porsches, I would say probably over 40 of them, are paint to sample. They're all limited editions, and over 50 of them have less than 100 original miles. So one thing that's really unique about the American Muscle Car Museum, we have over 270 vehicles that have less than 100 original miles. Another 40-plus vehicles between 100 and 1,000 original. Another 40-plus between 1,000 and 10,000. Another 80 vehicles that have been frame-off, full rotisserie restorations, and then the balance. So when you come to the American Muscle Car Museum, you'll be amazed at all the vehicles. You'll be amazed at how clean the vehicles are, ultra-low mileage, original vehicles. There's no customs, lead sleds, hot rods, nothing like that. Everything is all original. And then not only do you have all the original cars, but you have so many unique colors. So, you know, I'll buy a black or white vehicle if that's pretty much the only way they ever came. Otherwise, I like to get really unique color combinations. And it tells, people call me, it's like a Skittles collection. You know what I mean? Like you open up a bag of Skittles and you get all the different colors in there. Well, that's kind of what I have. I have so many different colors. People are just amazed. And then we have tons of memorabilia with it. We have 100-plus old neon signs, old antique gas pumps, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, RC Crown coolers, old kiddie rides, bumper cars, you know, they call them Dodge-em cars, whatever. You know, we have lots of restored balloon tire bikes, banana seat bikes, antique radios, old cigarette machines, candy machines, you know, jukeboxes, just tons and tons of other miscellaneous items, I guess would be the best way of putting it.
I wanted to jump back and say, what year was that you were in Germany when you first saw that Porsche?
1974, 1975.
Okay. All right. So fast forward now, it sounds like you basically have created Disney World for the car guy. Disneyland, Disney World. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So the acquisition of the cars, the memorabilia, the vintage machines, the vending machines and stuff like that. Do you have someone that's responsible for the acquisition of that? Or is that something you pretty much do yourself?
No, pretty much I do that myself, mainly because I've been collecting for so long. You know, when I was 30 years old, I had 12 old cars. When I was 40, I had 50. When I was 50 years old, I had 150. When I was 60 years old, I had 250. And so, you know, I just keep growing and adding. And I've gotten a lot of cars, I would say, since the American Muscle Car Museum has opened up, because people come and they see what we actually have and they go, hey, I have a friend of mine who has such and such car. It only has, I think, 23 or 27 original miles. It's been sitting in his place. He's now getting older. He's looking at selling it. And this would be a perfect place for the car to go. And I'm not a flipper. I don't buy the car and resell it. You know, I buy the car, and that's why I got 400-plus vehicles today, because I don't sell anything. You know, in 2023, I sold one vehicle, and that was a 2006 Ford GT yellow with 157 miles on it. And people go, 157 miles? What are you, crazy selling it? And I go, well, it was a high mileage duplicate. And they go, what do you mean high mileage duplicate? It only has 157 miles on it. I says, yeah, I know, but that's high mileage, because I found one with 16 original miles. Okay. So if I can find something with lower original miles, and of course all my cars have all the documentation with them, then I'll finally sell something. But people think I'm crazy. One time I even sold a car with 25 original miles because I found one with 5 original miles.
Oh my.
And so that being said, people go, man, what are you getting rid of that car with 25? And I probably shouldn't have sold it. You know what I mean? But I was kind of like, well, you know, where am I going to find one with 5? So, but that's, even when you buy a brand new car, you know, you can get cars brand new with 20, 22 miles on them, even though they've never been driven per se.
Wow. Mark, we got a few minutes left. There's a car that you got. I know you said you're a Ford guy. I'm a diehard Ford guy, okay? And I'm like you. I still have the cars I had in high school, too, back in the 70s, so I get the whole thing. It's just I don't have the 3 acres under roof. But nonetheless, you picked up this beautiful, stunning Mercury prototype car. I think it was a 57. Tell us a little bit about that car.
1956.
Okay.
1956, Mercury XM100.
Yes. Tell us about that car, because that car was at Mecum a few years ago, so I was there when that car sold. Did you pick it up at Mecum?
No, I didn't. I saw the car at Mecum, and what amazed me at Mecum is I was there walking around, and I saw this huge mob of people. And I was like, what are they looking at? What are they looking at? I couldn't see, so I kept walking by. I said, I'll check it out later. Came back again. There was a huge mob of people still around it. And I go, I got to go find out what the hell's going on there. Maybe somebody's handing out free $100 bills or something. You know, I don't know. And so I walked over there, and I saw the vehicle, and I just stopped. And I looked at it, and I go, man, that's really a beautiful vehicle. And then we ended up having, when that went for auction, I wasn't even there, you know, because we had an event going on at the car building. And somebody, and I totally had forgot about it, because, you know, in January we're doing stuff literally every weekend. Of course, you know, our peak season is November through the end of April. We're just booked solid. And somebody came, and, you know, one of our volunteers was driving over there at Kissimmee, and he says, hey, he says, I read you would have maybe bid on that Mercury. And I said, oh, yeah. He says, what did that sell for? And he goes, oh, it didn't sell. And I says, no, it didn't sell, no. And I said, oh, shit, I'll have to look into that. You know what I mean? And so eventually I ended up finding out who bought it. And I ended up contacting the owner, Tom Maruska, and he was actually from Duluth, you know, Minnesota. And so I tracked him down, and I says, hey, I says, do you still have that 1956 Mercury XM100 concept car? And he says, yes, I do. And so I ended up buying that vehicle from him in late April. And we just took it to Amelia Island Concourse here and this year in 2024. And so we got an Amelia Award, you know, best concept vehicle that they had at the show. And it just drew constant attention. The color combination is just stunning. People were just amazed at the vehicle. And, you know, so it's a truly stunning vehicle. We have it on a center turnstile at the American Muscle Car Museum. And people come by and they just look and they're starstruck. It's just truly stunning.
Wow. We got a few minutes left. Why don't you highlight one of the other really, really, really exceptional cars that you have that you're really proud of?
Okay. I would say people always ask me what my favorite car is.
Okay.
My favorite car is a 1966 427 Shelby Cobra.
Oh.
Beautiful story. It's all documented in, you know, the Shelby book. The original owner, okay, and I didn't have a dad like this when I was a kid growing up. His dad bought him that car as a high school graduation present. Okay. $6,700 brand new, got the original bill of sale paperwork. And he bought that car, gave it to his son who was going to college out in Iowa. He was originally from Haverhill, Mass. And the son, okay, this is now 10 plus years ago. I talked to the original owner of the vehicle, and he had that car for 2 years. And he used to drive it from school all the way back to Massachusetts and back again out to college. 1,300 miles. He said the fastest he ever did it was a little over 9 hours time. And the slowest he ever did it was 14 hours time. So I said, man, you were making good time in that car. And he says, yeah. He says, but you know what was the thing that always slowed me down? And I says, what's that? I had to keep stopping and getting fuel. Okay. And he says, man, he said, I just wasted so much time always having to fill that damn car up. Okay. Well, he put 20,000 miles on it out of the 38,000. And he made one horrible mistake in his life. 1968, the new Corvette came out, and it had T-tops. And he took that car that was $6,700 sticker price down to the local Chevy dealership in Iowa, traded that car in. They gave him $1,500 for a trade-in towards a brand new Corvette coupe with T-tops.
Oh.
And when his dad found out what he did, he could have killed his son. He says, "You did what?" Okay. And so he said that was the worst decision I ever made in my lifetime.
Wow.
And eventually the car was purchased by the owner of AC over in England. The car then was shipped over to England. It was restored, came back to the United States, was at the Shelby collection there in Colorado. And then I ended up buying that car back. Now, let's see, it'd be 16 years ago now. And so I've had it ever since, and we've had it at Amelia Island Concourse. And just a beautiful, stunning car in midnight blue, you know, just raw performance. That's, I guess, the only way you can describe that car, just, you know, raw performance. And so just beautiful, striking car, beautiful history of the vehicle. You know, I can just imagine, you know, when he was driving to and from Iowa to Massachusetts, man, he was really flying down the highway. And I said to him, I says, well, in all those years of driving like that, a couple years and 20,000 miles, I says, how many times did he ever get stopped? And he goes, you know, for speeding. And he goes, he says, I never got stopped. He says, they wouldn't even chase me. I just fly right by him and just keep on going.
Fitting,
now, today you wouldn't be able to do that.
No, today you wouldn't be able to do that. Anyway, all right, so Mark, we are just about up against the clock right now, and you know, the AC Cobra is one of those cars that's been on my wish list forever since day one. I got plenty of stories about that, the ones that always got away from me when they were affordable. But anyway, I want to thank you very much for coming out on and hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Real quickly, can you tell everybody, if they want to find out more about the American Muscle Car Museum, how do they go about doing it?
A couple ways to do it. One is go to our website, AmericanMuscleCarMuseum.com. You can also go ahead and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're always posting on Instagram, so you'll see lots of photos as well as videos and write-ups of the vehicles that we have.
Super. Well, Mark, I want to thank you very much for hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio and Cars again. I will be there on the 14th. I'm looking forward to the British All-European Car Show. I'm looking forward to that. So I look forward to seeing you again.
That's a fun car show. Yeah, very fun car show. You'll enjoy that.
I will. And then, and I'm looking forward to it. And again, I'd like to have you on again down the road sometime, and you can tell some more stories and pick out a few real interesting cars to talk about and share those with our listeners. We look forward to it.
That sounds great. I'll see you on the 14th at the British Car Show.
All right. Very good. Take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to thank my special guest this evening, Mark Pilach. I would say Pilach in German, but Mark Pilach of American Muscle Car Museum. This looks like a real exciting event. Definitely check out the website, AmericanMuscleCarMuseum.com. In the meantime, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Don't forget, every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network, where you can listen to the most fascinating legendary names in motorsports, find out some really cool stuff. Hey, guys, get out there and drive your cars. In the meantime, I want to see you at some of the car shows, but stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.